Welcome, everyone, to episode 225 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to preview the two Game 7s that we have on Sunday's slate. We're also going to say bye, Felicia, to the Boston Celtics, Houston Rockets, and catch up with a few we didn't hit in the first round, the Los Angeles Clippers and the San Antonio Spurs. Before we get to all that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews, and we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. I am actually very, very happy because Portland and Denver will play Game 7 at a reasonable hour for me. 9:30 p.m. Danish time, Sunday.
That, well, if the Warriors and Rockets had gone to Game 7, they would have been at 3:30. You were going to get a 3:30 Eastern game either way.
Yeah, but I don't care about, you know, Warriors or Rockets. I care about the best series we've had in the playoffs in years. So
that is
this works out beautifully for me.
And the NBA did everyone a favor, it's Mother's Day tomorrow, so you don't have to ignore your mothers the entire day, which is nice. You can at least spare some time for a nice Mother's Day brunch before settling on the couch and not moving for 12 hours.
Oh my God, it's Mother's Day.
Surprise!
Oh no. I am so glad you brought that up, Ryan.
Oh no. My very stable genius of a co-host indeed.
That's not great.
Well, while you ponder how screwed you are, we'll hit some Game 7 previews. We'll start with Denver-Portland, because as you said, that's the early game. I don't know, honestly, for both of these series, we're 6 games into both, and I still have no read whatsoever on these series. Like, I just don't know who's going to win either one of these games. But if you had to make a prediction on Nuggets Blazers, it's in Denver, so Nuggets have home court. Who are you taking in this game?
Probably Denver, and it hurts me saying that because I just want this series to be like the best of 15.
Yeah.
The Nuggets have a home court. They're just slightly deeper, and that's even with, you know, Rodney Hood just tearing it up for Portland.
Yeah.
I don't know, I like their chances. But I mean, either way, it wouldn't surprise me if Portland comes out and wins by 50, theoretically, I wouldn't sit back and go, whoa, really?
Right.
Like, these teams are playing so evenly these days that I'm just all in on this entire series. So I have no idea. I'm just going to sit back, relax, and enjoy the living hell out of it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would lean Denver. I would not at all be surprised if Portland wins. Like you, I thankfully have no emotional stakes invested in this game, unlike the game we'll hit shortly, so I can enjoy this one. And, like, you know, it's Game 7s are always just so fun because, like, the tension is ratcheted up to 1,000. And, like, it's going to probably be a somewhat ugly game. That's just usually how these things are. You've played 6 games against a team, like, there often aren't major strategical counterpunches that you haven't already tried out. Do you think either of these teams really does do something drastically different tomorrow? I was seeing like some speculation about maybe they start Zach Collins or maybe they start Rodney Hood for Portland. Like, do you think any major lineup changes or rotation changes? Or are they just going to kind of, like, you know, best man wins, basically?
Oh, I'm leaning towards best man wins. I would say this. So Rodney Hood starting, I would be okay with that, assuming Seth Curry steps it off the bench, because they still need something off that pine. They really do. And Seth, you know, he's got the capability of it. I really think he's been underutilized, not just in Portland, but even, you know, back in Dallas to some extent as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's always the forgotten guy, and you know, he could actually swing this game.
Yeah,
if he comes off the bench, if Rodney Hood still keeps playing it the way that he's done, like aggressively going into the paint, getting fouled, even making post moves, like where did that come from?
I know.
And draining threes, and like, yeah, that would be wonderful because it would give so many open opportunities for Dame and CJ to attack. And with Dame just lately dropping 30 footers,
yeah,
I mean, this is why I can see both sides winning this one. I mean, I wouldn't be at all surprised. Dame is on a mission, man.
Yeah. And it wouldn't surprise me if it comes down, as you're saying, to a role player. Just, like, which role player hits shots and which, yeah. like, which supporting cast shows up and which one doesn't. Because I think we know what we're getting from Jokic, Jamal Murray, Dame, and CJ. Like, I don't think any of those guys is going to have, like, atrocious game. Mm-hmm. It's just like, yeah, does Rodney Hood come up for 20 or 25? Does Seth Curry hit a couple threes? Does Will Barton take... You know, he did not take kindly to the whole, like, their front runner kind of thing that Seth Curry said after game six. Like, does he make it a personal mission to erase Seth Curry? Does Seth Curry want to one up his brother for what he did on Friday night? So, yeah, it's just going to be a fun game. Like, if you haven't been watching this series, I know it's late and, you know, maybe you're more invested in Warriors Rockets. If this is the first time you're watching this series, actually watch it tomorrow if you can. Like, I know you might be busy with your family, but if you're not, it's gonna be fun. Just watch this game.
Yep.
The other side is now Toronto Philly. Toronto blows out Philly in game five. It's not looking good. Philly comes back in game six. You get an aggressive Ben Simmons. You get Joel Embiid, who is he just looked far better even pregame. Like, you could just tell he was more, like, he had more energy. He just looked dead inside. Like, when he was waiting to get the jump ball in games four and five, like, his eyes were just dead. It was like, this guy should not be playing basketball right now. He's, like, clearly gutting it out. So, hopefully he's had a couple more days of rest. Hopefully he's over the respiratory infection he had in the middle of this series. Again, Toronto has home court. Who do you take in this one, Mort?
Toronto.
I hate you.
Yeah. Sorry. So, I mean, look, they've got home court. Toronto crowds are wild, man. I've been up there. They're wild. That was actually against the Sixers, believe it or not, just during a regular season game, during the very early part of the process. This was back in 2014.
That's when the Sixers were fun.
Yeah. they were so bad, but they were at least fun. Like, nobody really knew what was going on. Like, who's the alpha? Like, who's going to take this shot? Nobody had any clue, and it was wonderful.
It was Michael Carter-Williams at the time.
Yep. Oof. Yep. And James Anderson.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, process legends.
Yep. It was all good. But those guys up there in Canada, they know how to support their team, and I think they will come out, you know, and be so loud initially.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that Philly doesn't have a shot, because Jimmy Butler has been playing balls out.
Yeah.
And, you know, if he turns it in, you know, 35-7-7, which he's fully capable of, that could be one thing. But you need so many components if you're Philly to be on fire or at least contributing at a high factor. Like, you cannot have another Ben Simmons game where he's just standing around. You cannot have another game where J.J. Redick just isn't hitting. You can't have a game where Tobias Harris continues his 36% shooting. Yeah. Like, you need to have everyone involved and aggressive early and often.
Yeah. Yeah, Tobias, like, we're long overdue for a Tobias explosion to the point where I just wonder if it's going to happen at all in this series. Mm-hmm. The two things I keep coming back to are, one, when Embiid has been some modicum of healthy in this series, which is not games 2, 4, and 5, the Sixers won two of those three, and two of them were their most resounding wins of the series. And two is that Toronto crowd has just been, like, you're right. They're one of the most passionate fan bases in the NBA. Them standing outside in Jurassic Park, even for road games, it's great. Like, I love their passion. But they've been through so much with this team that I feel like if Philly comes out and gets out to, like, a double-digit lead early, every butthole in that arena, including on the team, is going to tighten. And they're just, like, I don't know that they have, like, that crowd has just been through so much that I don't know if they face early adversity like that. I think that is Philly's best chance. Like, if Toronto gets off to a good start, I think Toronto wins. If Philly gets off to a good start, I think Philly wins. I think this one's going to be a rock fight. I think it's going to be like the games 2 and 4, where it's like first team to 100 wins, first team to 95 possibly wins. Like, I think both of these teams are just so good defensively. And again, they've kind of figured each other out at this point.
Right.
But I'm going to be a homer. I'm taking Philly in this one.
The only thing that I don't know why I'm so preoccupied with this, but it's just been something that's been stuck in my mind. So let's assume that the crowd in Toronto doesn't react that well. It's pretty quiet. Like, they don't have their teams back, right?
Yeah.
And let's assume Philly actually comes out with the win. The next season, 2019-2020, I need Philly, with the first meeting from Toronto that season, to play Blame Canada on a PA.
I'm okay with that. I think they should just play nothing but Drake songs all night.
Well, that would be a great touring job to do, but I mean, come on. That'd
be pretty good. Yeah. I also think Embiid is like dying to troll the life out of Drake if they win this game.
Oh, yeah.
You know, after game five, like, Drake was trolling him as he walked off the court, and Embiid told him, "We're coming back."
Yeah.
which he turned out to be right. So, like, I honestly think we're going to get a decently big Embiid game. I don't know. Like, I think Simmons had his best game of the series. Jimmy has been very consistent, so I think he will continue to do that. Yep. It comes down to, like, it just if they play good defense, I think their defensive communication was night and day between games 4 and 5 and game 6. Like, I just think a healthy Embiid changes everything. And, like,
of course,
him not having to struggle to breathe as he's running down the court changes everything. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It could go either way. Both of these games tomorrow, it would not surprise me any permutation of who wins either one. But I hope we're just in for two really fun games, and I will be nervously pacing for 3 hours tomorrow night. So,
of course, as would Brett Brown, who's coaching for his job.
Yeah, we'll holster that for the Bye Felicia. But Mark Stein of the New York Times just dropped a lovely nugget about how he's probably going to get fired if they don't make the NBA Finals. So, everyone, if you enjoy anti-Philly rants, get ready for if they get knocked out, because I'm just going to rant for 10 minutes about how terrible their owners are and how they are the second coming of James Dolan.
Do I even need to be on the podcast when you do that?
Yeah, I think just for the laugh track. To make sure I don't curse too much.
All good.
All right, so let's go into the Bye Felicias now. Let's start with the two that just got knocked out, just because it's more fresh in our minds, and then we'll hit the Clippers and the Spurs at the end. Let's start with the Boston Celtics, Mort, because you were down on them in the first round, and rightfully so, just because of the whole their chemistry is awful all season. And then they sweep the Pacers, they win game one in Milwaukee, and then they get swept 4 straight games. Kyrie Irving is catastrophically awful in those games. Just like all of the goodwill he built up in the 2016 finals got flushed down the toilet in this series, just because he played like disinterested hero ball. Like he was awful on both ends of the court, and he didn't look anything like a guy playing for his next contract. It just looked like he wanted to get the heck out of Boston. So he will decline his player option this summer. He will become a free agent. There have been rumors linking him to the Knicks, now to the Nets. Like, Vegas has him. I think the Nets are the second favorite to end up with him. There's some speculation about whether he would go to the Lakers to rejoin LeBron. It was a little stronger before the Lakers' whole coaching debacle. And, you know, it seemed like they were going to get Ty Lue, so you could just bring back the band from 2016. That does not seem like it's going to happen. But what do you think happens with Kyrie this summer, Mort? Do you think he stays in Boston? Do you think he goes elsewhere? And should Boston even want him to stay?
Bye-bye. He's gone. He's gone. Yeah. Look, I think he's going to New York. I think all the other parts, like the Lakers, the Nets, smokescreen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's a Knick.
It wouldn't.
And here's what I also think. I think Al Horford looks at that and he goes, you know what? I know that I have a $30 million player option, but there's no Kyrie. We're not going to make it further.
Mm-hmm.
I may opt out of the $30 million, but I can sign with someone else for a longer period of time, just slightly less money.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at least lock in some long-term security, because he's 32 at this point.
32. So that means, you know, if he can just get a 3-year contract out of somebody, maybe even like a Paul Millsap contract.
Yeah.
Like 3 years, maybe not 90, but like at least 3 years, 80.
Or like 3 years. I would say even like 70.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a bargain in my opinion, but yeah, absolutely. I could totally see that happening. And if, like, could you imagine Boston losing Kyrie and Horford in the same offseason? Like, then would there even be a point in trying to trade for Anthony Davis? He'll basically be the only one left on the team. Like, no.
Right. So that is the other complicating factor in that. I think the really interesting thing about Boston is how all of this is so intertwined. And I wrote about this at the Basketball Writers on Friday. And more, speaking of the Basketball Writers, are you tired of clickbait, ads, pop-up videos, talking head hyperbole, big market bias, and data selling? Are you tired of soap operas, wild speculation, and unnamed sources? Are you tired of padding the stats of CEOs and shareholders while your favorite content creators get paid pennies for their work? At bballwriters.com, they are too. That's why they created the Basketball Writers. At bballwriters.com, they concentrate on just the game and everything they love about it. The NBA, WNBA, EuroLeague, fantasy basketball, the upcoming draft, many more corners of the hoops universe they're soon to explore. All in one place on a blazingly fast, clean site that lets you choose which writer to directly support while still enjoying all the content from their whole team. Elevate the conversation, elevate the game. They'll see you at bballwriters.com. And don't forget to enter the code THENBAPOD for 10% off your annual, monthly, or daily subscription. That is the THENBAPOD for 10% off. So I think, as I said, I wrote this article for them on Friday just about like the whole Anthony Davis conundrum, basically. Because the whole theory is if you get Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving will re-sign. But a big part of your... the appeal to your trade... Well, also, you can't trade for Anthony Davis. The trade cannot become official until after July 1st because of the whole Rose Rule restriction, right, which is why they couldn't trade for him at the trade deadline. So a big part of the appeal of your trade offer, if you're Boston, is you have at least 3 first-round picks this year. You have... in theory, unless, like, Sacramento goes up to number 1 and it goes to Philly and whatever. They could have 4 if Memphis slips down. So you theoretically want to have that deal agreed to by the draft so you can include some of those picks. The Pelicans can tell you who to pick, and then you'll just include them in the trade afterward. But you might not know what Kyrie's going to do. Like, in theory, Danny Ainge is going to go up to Kyrie sometime between now and June 20th and say, Kyrie, we can get Anthony Davis. Would that be enough for you to re-sign? And Kyrie will probably say something about how the earth is flat. Like, ask me July 1st. So that's the question, Moritz. If you don't have a guarantee from Kyrie Irving about what he's going to do, do you still risk trading for Anthony Davis? Do you give up some combination of Tatum, Jaylen Brown? You would have to include one of Hayward or Marcus Smart. Or if Horford opts in, I think you could offer him as well, which is another... That goes back to the Horford thing. Like, if you're Al Horford and Kyrie is going to leave potentially, do you opt in and risk being traded to New Orleans?
Yeah, no to all of it. I mean, I just don't see the point. Yeah. The entire idea is to pair Kyrie Irving with Anthony Davis because they're on like the same age. They're in the same age group. Mm-hmm. Both are highly productive. It's like a point guard and a big man that they need to connect together, and then you need to have some sort of stable wing situation in Boston. Like, you can probably get away with keeping Jaylen Brown if you're moving Tatum and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, no, it doesn't make sense bringing in Davis if you lose Kyrie in free agency, and if Horford leaves as well, like, then you're left with Davis, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier?
Whichever one of Smart and Hayward were not included in the trade.
Right. Like, that's not appealing to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the really, like, it's... Unless Ainge gets a guarantee from Kyrie, if you trade for Anthony Davis, I will re-sign here.
Yeah.
He's in, like, an incredibly tough spot here just because of all the different variables. Like... I lean with you also because one of the things that in theory set Boston apart this year, I mean, in practice it did not, but they had so many different interchangeable wings, and having that kind of wing depth should be a huge asset, especially in a conference when you're going against a Giannis and a Kawhi and, right. you know, Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris, Ben Simmons, those kind of guys. Getting rid of a lot of those guys or having to include them as part of your package for Davis makes you potentially weak at your strongest spot right now. Like, yeah, yep. you're, you know, even if, like, let's say Kyrie stays and Anthony Davis comes, and then you have a starting lineup of Kyrie, Davis, Horford, whichever one of Smart and Hayward stay. Maybe you can keep Brown, maybe not. Like, you're really top heavy all of a sudden, and you've sacrificed a lot of the depth that was supposed to set you apart this year. Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% sure that they'd be better off. Like, I almost think they'd be better off not trading for him, even though that sounds crazy.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, that would be a Sixers situation all over again. And you know, sorry, but that's not the way necessary to go. And it seems like we've entered into this fascination of building, like, a very top-heavy starting lineup in today's league.
Yeah.
Like, you need five stars all of a sudden, and then there's, like, no bench.
Right.
I just don't think that's the way to move forward.
Yeah. I mean, I think the theory is, like, top-end talent wins out, and when you shorten your rotations in the playoffs, the depth isn't as important, which
right.
I guess in, like, a small sample size might be true, but you also really reduce your margin for error, because if one of your starters goes down with an injury, and it's not like Anthony Davis has a clean bill of health by any means, I don't know. You're just putting so many eggs in that basket. Like, the absolute worst case scenario is they trade for Davis. They give up mm-hmm. Tatum and Brown for Davis, plus, you know, whatever they need for salary matching. Kyrie leaves in a year, then Kyrie leaves this summer, then Davis leaves in a year, and they've got nothing. Like, they have nothing to show for that Nets trade that should have set them up for dominance for the next decade.
I would agree.
I almost think, like, Kyrie leaving, you didn't give up all that much in retrospect for Kyrie. You gave up Isaiah Thomas, who we've seen what's happened to him since. Yeah. You gave up that Brooklyn Nets pick that turned into Colin Sexton. You're not totally, like, whatever. That's not the end of the world if you lose Colin Sexton. Like, you still
I would just have to point out that Isaiah Thomas is still in the playoffs.
Technically, that is true. Yes. Making a big contribution. But, like, you still have Tatum, Brown, Hayward, Smart, Horford. Like, you still have really good players, even if Irving leaves. Like, I don't know that you need to go all in if you're Boston. I mean, I almost think that, you know, a lot of the problem this year was there were too many mouths to feed, especially after the young kids led that run last year, and it's hard to ask them to take a back seat all of a sudden now with Hayward coming back and Irving coming back, and Hayward, you know, not looking like his old self consistently. So it's hard to tell a Jaylen Brown, who averaged like 16 or 17 points in the playoffs last year, like, go to the bench because we want to try to get this guy who's earning a lot more money but isn't playing as well as you.
Right.
We want to get him going. That's a tough sell. And even, you know, Terry Rozier came out after game 5 and was like, no one sacrificed more than me this year, which is, you know, you could argue is true. Like, he was the starting point guard on a team that was one game away from the finals last year and then went back to a low usage bench role in which he severely struggled.
Mm.
So I don't know. I think the Celtics are, like, the most interesting team in terms of, like, all of the different directions they can go this summer. Yeah. Because they hold, the Anthony Davis sweepstakes, we'll find out where or who wins the lottery Tuesday and where, you know, how that affects the Zion trade and AD trade and all that good stuff. But, like, in theory, Boston has the best offer for AD, barring a miracle. So how that...
I still disagree with that, but okay.
Well, I guess if Chicago won the lottery, they could put together a better offer.
Yeah. Well, I was speaking about Denver, though that valid anymore because of Millsap, now that I think about it. But you know what I mean, though.
Yeah.
Like, they have so many young guys there that you know, playing off the bench, like Malik Beasley, Monte Morris. You can add Jamal Murray, Juan Hernan Gomez. Like, there are so many bits and pieces there that I think would be more attractive for a team starting over. And again, like, let's make no mistake about it. If you're trading Anthony Davis, you're starting over, right?
Like, yeah. But I still think, like, Tatum is the crown jewel of...
I agree with that.
Of, like, any Anthony Davis trade. And I think you could reasonably project, yeah, he had a disappointing second season relative to his first. You didn't see the progress you would have liked. Put him in a role where he's more featured, and I think he's going to turn it. He's a fine player. I'm not giving up
on Tatum. No. At all. I totally agree.
Yeah. So, I am morbidly intrigued to see what happens to the Celtics over the next 8 weeks, because I think it's going to go a long way towards shaping the Eastern Conference playoff picture. Like, there is a non-zero chance that they get AD, Kyrie stays, and they're the favorites in the East next year. There's also a non-zero chance they trade for AD, Kyrie leaves, and all of a sudden they're kind of screwed after the 2019-2020 season.
And there's the possibility that they keep Kyrie, get AD, and it doesn't work out.
Yeah, that too. So everyone send your best wishes to Danny Ainge, because he's got a very, very tricky next 2 months coming up.
So just to wrap up Kyrie real quick, though. Mm-hmm. The reason I have him going to the Knicks was I was reminded, we have a thread on Twitter
mm-hmm.
with a lot of writers and bloggers and whatnot. And, you know, in that, I was reminded of how much Kyrie wanted the Knicks before he got drafted.
Yeah.
Like, the Knicks was all he was on about. The mm-hmm. Knicks, the Knicks, the Knicks. That was, like, his childhood team, right?
Yeah.
It's wide open right now.
Yeah.
Like, this is his shot. Like, you only have so many years in your prime.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying this is, you know, it's bigger than basketball necessarily, but because the Knicks are horrid.
Right.
But I just think that if you have a certain love for a specific team growing up, and they can offer you a max contract, even if you're shorting yourself a couple mil, mm-hmm. you're still going into one of the most active markets in the entire league. So you can probably make that up by, you know, on the side, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Like, why not?
There's been enough smoke around Durant and Kyrie as a package deal to New York that it wouldn't surprise me at all. Because it's not just, like, Lakers fans photoshopping every superstar into their jersey. These are, like, plugged-in reporters saying all year, these guys have been considering it. It's at least on the table. I would say, if you had to say Boston or the field for Kyrie, I would take the field.
Yeah.
Like, I think there is a greater than 50% chance that he leaves Boston this year.
Yeah. I think we're going to see some drama. I could imagine that Kyrie and KD are, like, already set on going to New York, and then maybe if the Warriors win the title, KD is like, well, and Kyrie is like, dude, I just signed with the Knicks.
All right. That would make me very happy.
That could be so much fun.
Yeah. All right, let's go into the other team that has gotten knocked out, I guess, last night, even. The Houston Rockets. And man, oh man, they had a golden opportunity, no pun intended. Kevin Durant goes down with a calf strain in the third quarter of Game 5. They erase a 20-point Warriors lead, but lose in the end of a close game in that one. Durant doesn't play in Game 6. They go back home. Steph Curry is scoreless at halftime. He goes off for 33 in the second half, and they lose. Their season is over. At this point, Mort, where do you stand on the Rockets moving forward? Do they have to make a substantive change, whether in regard to their roster or their offense philosophy, their defensive philosophy? Or is it just like, are they basically the 97 Jazz, where they're just running into this historical juggernaut over and over again, and they're a great team. It's just like they happen to be a great team at the worst possible time.
Yeah, that you nailed it. This is like the tens version of the Jazz. Absolutely. Yeah. James Harden is an incredible talent. You have Chris Paul, who is still, despite his age, very effective, strong defender. You know, an emotional leader, a truly tremendous playmaker. But now I'm beginning to look forward. I'm looking at that cap sheet right now.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's bad. We all knew that coming in.
Right.
But it's the Chris Paul contract, because you and I were talking about when he signed it. you know, he signed for 4 years
mm-hmm.
and almost $160 million.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about if you can get 2 good years out of him, then it might be worth it. If you could get 3, totally worth it. But if you only got 1 good year out of him, it wouldn't be worth it. Mm-hmm. That's where we landed.
Yeah.
He's had a good year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he can replicate it.
Yeah. I mean, like, he was great in Game 6. They were, you know, there was some argument they're lucky to draw the Warriors in the second round because that means they're healthier. There's less of a risk of Chris Paul being injured at that point. And mm-hmm. to some extent, that played out. But, yeah, I mean, you look, as you said, look at their cap sheet next year. They already have $116.2 million in guaranteed salary on the books devoted to 5 players. The cap is $109. Yeah. So fill that out with retaining some of their current free agents or, you know, maybe spending the mid-level exception, whether taxpayer or non-taxpayer. It's going to be really hard for them to duck the tax for a second straight year and build a competent core. I mean, they have Paul, Harden, Capella, Gordon, Tucker under contract. Gordon and Tucker are both under contract for only 1 more year. It's going to be very hard to give this team a bench that is worth playing. I mean, they were down to a 7-man rotation, basically, by the end of the playoffs. And it feels like they're just going to be in that same boat next year. I do think, I know they are, like, in terms of offensive efficiency, they are a great team. I do think they could stand to improve just in terms of, like, I mean, at the end of Game 6 especially, and Game 5 too, their offense devolves into James Harden dribbles at the top of the arc for 10 seconds and then either tries to drive and kick for a three on the, like, a corner three to someone else, or he'll do a step back three. Mm-hmm. And they hit those shots at a decent percentage, but that's not high percentage basketball. Like, that's not just because you have the talent to make that work and it works more often than not doesn't mean it's like the optimal way to play. I think having a little bit more ball movement and having a little more player movement, just having something to make you less predictable. Like
a mid-range shot?
Right. I mean, it's just so... I feel like it's probably pretty easy to scheme against this team. Now, stopping a guy like Harden, who is a transcendent talent, he's catching a lot of slander on Twitter today, and I think a lot of that is unfair. Like, he played very well in this series. The Rockets just choked. I think that it comes down to it. Like, you know, Harden did have a couple of really bad mistakes late. He had the offensive foul on Draymond. He had that really lazy turnover after Steph had hit the, like, absurd shot in PJ Tucker's face, you know, on the inbounds play. Like, it's just hard to shake this feeling that, for whatever reason, they can't get over this Warriors hurdle because this, they had such a good opportunity to do so. But I also don't think they have, like, I don't know that you're gonna, there's an option of, like, okay, find better shooters. How? Like, you have a mid-level and that's it. You know, it's not easy to completely renovate their roster. You're not gonna find someone to take Chris Paul's contract, most likely. Trade Clint Capella, right. I guess that's an option, but...
Yeah, for what, though?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Like, I trade Eric Gordon, he was your second best player for most of this series.
Yeah.
Trade PJ Tucker. He's, you know, he was an incredibly valuable player. And you have him, I mean, he's under contract for 1 more year, and then he's got a non-guaranteed year in 2020, 2021. So, you know, you need a defensively versatile weapon like him. I think, honestly, if you're the Rockets, I think you just have to run it back 1 more year and pray to God that Kevin Durant leaves the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. Now, you talked about changing their philosophies,
mm-hmm.
and in terms of the mid-range game, like, that's the biggest difference between them and Golden State. Like, Golden State won't turn down an open mid-ranger.
Right.
I think that's the more simplistic thing, but at the end of the day, the roster is the primary concern because of their cap sheet.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know where you go from here. Like, do you offer Clint Capella and Eric Gordon for Anthony Davis? That'll be declined in a very, very quickly.
Right.
Besides, like, Eric Gordon going back to New Orleans.
No.
But, like, you can't. How do you even retain Austin Rivers? Like, do you use your one of your exceptions? Because yeah. he's getting a bigger offer on the open market.
Right. You only have non-bird rights on him.
So. Exactly.
Yeah, you have
bird rights. Nene is going to retire, right?
He was talking about it, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like so you have bird rights on Shumpert, you have early bird rights on Green, non-bird on Rivers and Farid. So it's...
That's yeah. not great.
No, you're right. You would basically have to use... I don't think Austin Rivers gets a full MLE. I hope not, at least. But yeah, you're probably going to have to use some portion of your MLE to keep either of those guys, or you have to spend it on someone else, and all the while you have to stay under the tax, which I mean, it really mathematically might not even be possible, but like I think it, you know, there is a lot of Rocket slander on Twitter today. I think Tillman Fertitta should get a lot more of it, like, and we've been on this the whole year, but yep. you had a team that won 65 games and was in game 7 of the Western Conference Finals last year. And, you know, the whole, like, we would have won if Chris Paul didn't get hurt thing loses a little bit of steam now that we saw what happened this year. But you could at least make the argument that you pushed this version of the Warriors harder than any other team has. And then right. you cheap out and you make your general manager get under the tax. Like, you deserve this. This should be a warning sign to any team that is close to... You know, that could talk themselves into being title contenders. And if they're like, oh no, we need to make cost-cutting moves so we stay under the tax. Like, I am subtweeting the Sixers owners right now. If they do this crap this summer, they deserve everything that's coming. And that's, like, for Titta the same way. If you cheap out on your team and try to duck the tax when you have a team that is ready to win right now, you deserve this. You deserve to lose.
So about the cheaping out part. You know, they gave Paul $160 million last year.
Yeah.
Was Tillman the owner by that at that point? I don't think was he in control yet, or was that still on like the transition period?
I don't 100% remember, but I'm more referring to like the role players.
Yeah, I get that, but my point is when you give a guy who is at that point in time what 33.
Yeah.
4 years and $160 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's just going to limit, you know, everything else that you do on the roster. Like, yeah. everything else.
Right.
Like, he stands to earn $44 million in 2021.
Yeah.
Look, dude, I mean, at the end of the day, we're talking about a contract that completely handcuffs you. I know that at the time, it was very much necessary to keep Paul... So that's why it had to happen this way. But you have to make sure that you're not sacrificing the entire structure of the team just to maintain one guy, even though it is Chris Paul. So I get the whole cheaping out bit, but that was just... I think at the end of the day, that's the contract we're going to look back on. That's the CP3 yeah. contract.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it goes back to our whole theory of, like, it's really hard to build around a big three or a big four because mm-hmm. basically... You have bird rights, like once you get your big three in place, you have bird rights, early bird rights, whatever on your current supporting cast. Once those guys are gone, you only have your MLE, maybe your biannual draft picks, minimum contracts. That's it.
Right.
So like letting Trevor Ariza go, I know he got overpaid like crazy by the Suns, but letting him go led you down this path. Where you had to rely on basically the buyout market, and they got really lucky, and it was a credit, yeah. you know, it's a testament to Morey to being able to work with these constraints and still assemble a team that, you know, arguably was the second best team in the West. Not, you know, not based on record, but like in terms of, I think the Rockets are going to push the Warriors harder than whoever makes it out in the other bracket. Mm. But it's just the matter of, you're still kind of stuck after a while when you have this big three, just because it's a testament to the collective bargaining agreement. It's working the way it should. You should not be able to continue assembling a lot of great role players around the supporting, like around a 2 or 3 max team.
Like, right.
You have to pick and choose your lane, and this is what the Rockets did, as well they should. I don't fault them for choosing this path. It's just you had to know if we let our role players go, if we're afraid to retain our role players because of the luxury tax, we're going to be limited in the ways that we can then build out our supporting cast again.
Right. So let's get back to the Rockets here.
Mm-hmm.
For next year specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this idea or thought that this was really the Rockets' year.
Yeah.
In terms of this was their last big chance, because Denver, they're knocking on that door.
Definitely.
And next year, I think they've entered the room and thrown out Houston out the window, locked the doors, locked the windows, and that's all she wrote for the Rockets.
Yeah. Now, if you're the Rockets, your only hope is that Durant leaves, and right. The Warriors are going to be in a similar boat where they're not going to have cap space to replace him. So
right.
They won Game 6, which is incredible. And it just shows their championship medal. I mean, a lot of them were saying after the game, this is one of our best wins of this era, which says something because they've won 3 titles already. I don't know that they can sustain it over a full 82-game season and over a full 7-game playoff series. So if you're the Rockets, I think really if you're the Rockets, you're going to run it back one more year. And then after that, Gordon's going to be a free agent. And you're either going to say, you know, they have $102.75 million in 2020 committed to 3 guys. Mm-hmm. And I believe the cap that year is 118. So that's not, you know, you're capped out already basically once you start factoring in roster charges, and you're going to keep Tucker presumably. So I think 2020 is probably the swing point for the Rockets, but I do think they bring it back one more year, and I think they'll be a top 3 team in the West next year. It's just, can they finally push it over the top? Can they find the right role players to fit their system? And do they decide to make offensive changes? Do they decide to switch their philosophy? I'm not saying they need to overhaul it completely, but no team is perfect. Like, if you don't seek to improve upon what you're running, then you're just going to stagnate. So it's going to be a long offseason for the Rockets. I think we can say that much for sure.
I have one solution, though, and I know it's relying on a 21-year-old.
Okay.
They should do whatever they could, whatever they can, to acquire the draft rights to Carson Edwards.
Mm.
Even though he's projected as, like, in an early second-rounder, late first-rounder.
Okay.
You know, tough guy who can get you, like, at least in college, got you, like, 24 points a game.
Mm-hmm.
Because they need a reliable scoring knack off the bench.
Yeah,
for sure. It doesn't matter if the guy's undersized. It doesn't matter if he's young. They just need someone who can come off the bench and create buckets.
Mm-hmm.
Because relying on James Harden to score 36 points a game, relying on Chris Paul to somehow defy Father Time.
Right.
And again, Eric Gordon, he can be so hot or he can be so cold. There's nothing really in between.
Yeah.
You need something else, and you need some youth as well, because this team is getting old.
Yeah, for sure. Well, also, I mean, you need a lot more out of Clint Capella. Like, we haven't talked about him at all, because that's how much of a non-factor he was in this series. I know he's limited in terms of he's not a unicorn big, but he was useless, man. He did nothing offensively. He needs to have some semblance of an offensive threat aside from rim roller and putback dunks.
Right. And he's even improved every single year.
Yeah.
But in this playoffs, maybe it's the whole, you know, James Harden focus that may have actually regressed him in a playoff setting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just everything seems to be going in on, hey, James needs to make the decision. James needs to take the shots. James this, James that. Whereas Clint is a perfectly capable scorer around the rim from his own account. I mean, even rim rolling, like, he's a guy who can actually get you 17 points a game if you include him in the game plan.
Yeah.
I think he was included in the game plan. I just think it got mucked up, and I think Golden State is a switch heavy and very, very disciplined defensive team, so I think that counts.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's absolutely better than what he showcased.
Yeah.
And now it's on D'Antoni to figure out, okay, how do I get arguably my second best player, third best player at the very least, more involved?
Yeah.
Because this notion that Capela is solely a defensive-oriented player who can't score is overwhelmingly incorrect.
And it's problematic in a playoff series where you need him to give you more of an offensive yes. punch, and he doesn't.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, let's go into the Los Angeles Clippers now. For all the slander we just had about the Celtics and the Rockets, I know the Clippers got knocked out in the first round, but I feel better about the Clippers' future than I do about the Rockets, for sure.
Of course. And you know why it is? There's a trend here, or at least a common theme. Mm-hmm. Whenever we talk about teams that have very clean cap sheets,
yep.
we're very, very optimistic. Not necessarily because of raw cap space, but just because of the opportunities it provides in having financial flexibility.
Yeah.
You can take on people in trades. Even if you're rebuilding, you can take on bad contracts for picks. Like, having a clean cap sheet is just so necessary in these days.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a testament to what they've done over the past, what, like 2 years? Because they,
yeah.
Chris Paul was, the Chris Paul trade was 2017. That's 2 years ago. It's unbelievable that they, you know, they were the prime example of a big three that hit its peak and never quite got over the hump. And then they flip Chris Paul and they get Lou Williams back. They get Pat Bev back. They got Harrell in that deal too, I believe. Mm-hmm. Like three guys who were major contributors to a 48-win playoff team this year. They've nailed some draft picks, Gilgeous Alexander in particular.
Yeah.
I don't care what happens with Harris and the Sixers moving forward. They boat raced the Sixers in that trade. Just absolutely
boat raced them. Looks like it. Yeah. It's beginning to look like it. Yeah.
I mean, it's just how you get two first round picks and Shamet, who's just a good role player for a guy on an expiring contract that you weren't planning on re-signing, is beyond me. It was an incredible, like, just top-notch, phenomenal job. And yeah, I mean, they have enough cap space already for one max contract. All they have to do is flip Danilo Gallinari, who, you know, he just had his most productive season. You're probably not going to, like, bank on him to do that moving forward, but I don't necessarily know that he's a negative asset. He's on an expiring $22.6 million contract. I don't think they would have to package, like, a first-round pick to get out of that deal. I think some team would happily take him on without needing too many
sweeteners. Of course, when the Lakers strike out, they need someone else.
Oh man, that would be so funny if the Lakers strike out and trade for Gallo to enable the Clippers to have two max guys. But I mean,
never gonna happen. But yeah,
yeah, right. But someone will. But I mean, that's the whole thing. Is like you can very easily get to a double max. You definitely have enough for a single max. Kawhi has been long linked to LA. And now that LeBron is it with the Lakers, and the Lakers are a disaster, it seems like, you know, the Clippers have made no secret about their desire to sign him. They've also, they're, you know, actively, openly courting Kevin Durant. And if I'm a free agent, is there a team out there that can realistically create cap space? I'm not talking, you know, like, everyone could with enough moves, but like, teams with enough, like a realistic pathway to max cap space this summer. Say you're a star free agent, a max contract guy. Is there a team you would choose over the Clippers? Because for me, I don't think there is.
You know, assuming you're not satisfied with the team that you're on.
Right. Yeah. You want to leave your team.
No, I mean, it's California. It's a big market. You are in some respects, right? The pressure is less on you due to the sheer existence of LeBron with the Lakers.
For sure.
Because the spotlight is going to be on the Lakers and LeBron, because that's just how the media rolls.
Yeah.
Which means if you're in LA, you know, those microphones, they might be coming at you, but if LeBron's standing next to you, they're not coming at you as quickly.
Right.
So I think that could be a huge benefit to whoever signs for the Clippers, knowing full well, hey, I'm going to be in LA. I'm going to win. I'm going to go to a team with a great infrastructure, like a great organization. And there's a guy in, you know, the locker room down the hall that's going to get all the attention.
Yeah.
I can just do me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great point. I mean, that, you know, the famously quiet Kawhi It kind of seems like a perfect fit for him. Like, if he really does want to go to L.A., like, going to the Lakers with LeBron and with everything that happened this past year is the worst possible idea. Going to the Clippers, where, as you said, LeBron's going to be a media vacuum, especially given the drama from this current offseason. There's going to be a fascination with the Lakers, even in the Clippers. You add Kawhi Leonard to this team, they're a 55-60 win team.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Easy. I mean, and you really should never say easy when it's talking about 55-60, but Kawhi's that good.
Yeah, just ask Bill Simmons, the 67-win Celtics, RIP.
But, I mean, even if you keep Gallo, right?
Yeah.
And then you get Kawhi, like, that would function well as well.
And you'll still have a lot of cap space left over. Like, you could bring in a Dwayne Dedman. You could bring in a Danny Green if they just want to stay together forever. Like, you have room to add pieces beyond Kawhi because you have productive players on rookie contracts. And you have Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell combined next year make $14 million.
Right. Which is ridiculous.
That's just an outrageous amount of production from those two. And then Lou is under contract for the following season for $8 million. Like, that contract is worth its weight in gold. That might be one of the best non-rookie contracts in the NBA.
Of course. Yeah.
So, like, that's also appealing to me. And then the Clippers also have, you know, looked out the hall at the Lakers, who don't have a front coach or a head coach or don't have a team president, and have Kurt Rambis apparently usurping the entire rest of the front office. And then look at the Clippers, who have Jerry West advising them. They have Lawrence Frank. They have Doc Rivers, a championship-winning head coach. And then they have Steve Ballmer, who is one of the richest owners in the NBA, and is, you know, he's revolutionized the culture there in a very short period of time since taking over for Donald Sterling. Like,
yeah, no, he's a good owner. Like, it's not just a matter of his pockets. Like, he's genuinely a good owner. He understands what it takes. Yeah, I mean, he had, you know, the owner learning curve, but it was way quicker than most.
Yeah.
And whatever he did that was bad wasn't really egregious to the same point.
It
just makes sense.
Letting go, like, it's just clear that he trusts his basketball guys more than a first-time owner usually does. Because, like, if you inherit a team with Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, and DeAndre Jordan, most first-time owners would ride that into the ground and then let all of those guys walk in free agency and, like, have nothing to show for it. For him to realize, like, we need to pull the plug on this thing and to do it in the way that he did and set the team up the way he has is, I mean, he deserves all the credit in the world. Because that's not an easy decision. Like, giving up on a Hall of Fame point guard in Chris Paul, I know he was going to leave as a free agent anyway, so turning that into a trade instead of just a free agent departure was a hell of
a good trade.
Yeah, right. Like, you get a lot of useful pieces that contributed to a 48-win team. And then the whole Blake Griffin thing, I know it was, like, really cold-blooded, but turning him, you know, re-signing him and flipping him 6 months later, and then Tobias Harris was the centerpiece of that deal, and then flipping Tobias Harris 6 months before he becomes a free agent, or 5 months, whatever. And getting, like, they turned Blake Griffin into so much.
Yeah.
So much in terms of value. I'm absolutely in love with what the Clippers have done. I think, I'm in support of, like, the Lakers did not deserve LeBron because they've just been so poorly run. Like, the Clippers deserve a star free agent this summer.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. You know what's really fun, though? It seems like the Clippers are actually being played on a 2K platform.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what they've done and what they've gotten back in trades seem very unrealistic when you really take a strong gander at it.
Yeah.
Like, if you had told me how much they would have gotten back in total for CP3, for Blake, for Harris, yada, 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 the list goes on, I would have told you no way.
Yeah. They've just done a remarkable job. And I selfishly hope Kawhi goes there so I never have to see him in a playoff series again. It's very stressful.
Oh, that's where it is. Yeah, yeah. Always with the Sixers angle. Okay.
Right. I mean, I'm low-key rooting for him to get the hell out of the East because he is just an unstoppable robot of a basketball player. It's horrible going against him. But, no, I mean...
Yeah, like, you'll still have to run into Giannis and get beaten to pulp, but okay.
Right. That's fine. But, yeah, I mean... I really hope their plans are not for naught this summer. But even, like, I think the good thing about the Clippers is, even if they don't get a star free agent, which I think is unlikely. If I had to put my money on it, I think Kawhi does go there. But even if they don't, I have faith in them not to go panic and, like, give, you know, $80 million to bring DeAndre Jordan back or something stupid like that. Like, I think they'll just, I think they will be smart about the way they allocate their cap space this summer, regardless of whether they get a max free agent or not.
I would agree.
All right. So we're super high on the Clippers then. Good.
Yeah.
That is resolved.
That's what it really boils down to. Yeah. And I think that shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
So let's wrap up then with the San Antonio Spurs, who,
yes,
without fail, because Greg Popovich is the coach, they made the playoffs for like the 8,000th straight year. I think dinosaurs actually roamed the earth the last time they did not make the playoffs. Pop recently signed a 3-year extension, which is great news for everyone. So he will be with the Spurs. It still sounds like he's going to take it year to year. So it's not necessarily that he will be with the Spurs for all three of those years, but at least he has expressed some interest in continuing, because we didn't know. I mean, there were reports that he was considering retiring after this season or after the 2020 Olympics. So it's just nice to have some resolution, at least temporarily. And honestly, I think this is probably one of his more rewarding coaching jobs. He took a really tough Denver team to 7 games in the first round. He loses Kawhi in the offseason. He loses his starting point guard in Murray in the preseason. And they still win 48 games.
Yeah.
It's
almost dumb, right?
Yeah. Like, I'm never going to doubt this team. As long as Greg Popovich is the coach, they're going to win at least 45 games. I would usually say 50, but they haven't gotten those in the last 2 years. But they're going to win 45 games and make it the playoffs. Write it in stone. That's all we really have to say about the Spurs. But they do have a couple notable free agents. Rudy Gay, chief among them. They also have Dante Cunningham and Quincy Pondexter. But, like, they're otherwise pretty well set up for next year already. They've got DeRozan, Aldridge, Patty Mills, Bertans, Bellinelli, Bryn Forbes, Jakob Poeltl, Lonnie Walker, Derek White, Murray, all under contract. So we know who's coming back.
And two first-rounders.
Yeah. And like, I am just terrified of their backcourt. With you know, Derek White started to slow down a little bit at the end of that Denver series when they swapped Torrey Craig onto him. But he's only going to get better. He's still so young. Get it Murray back as well. Like, that is just such a defensively terrifying backcourt. Throwing Lonnie Walker in there too, like, will a single team score a single point against their backcourt next year?
I doubt it. Yeah. I doubt it. It's absolutely sublime defensively. They need a little bit of a push offensively, but you know what, Lonnie Walker has something to say about that. That's why I think he got brought in. Like, they needed some punch, and this dude can do some damage offensively, especially under, you know, the tutelage of the Spurs coaching staff.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, their one pick is at 19, so I know this draft is not... I feel like, am I wrong in saying this draft is getting a bad rap because it lacks a lot of top-end talent? But, like, there will still be productive players in the 11 to 30 range. It's just that you can't really draw a huge difference between those guys, so it almost might behoove you to be a little bit further down the board.
Yeah. So the problem with this draft class isn't really that it's non-existent of talent, because that's crazy.
Right.
It's the thing is, you know, when you go after after the top five, you know, you can argue that the next 10 picks, you know, 5 to 15, could go in other drafts, like, between 15 and 30.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the players coming after that are all, you know, G League caliber players. That's never been the sentiment. The sentiment has just been that the players of, you know, in the mid first round or mid lottery guys are not necessarily as projected as being as good as in other draft classes.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. You can still find considerable talent. You can still find difference makers later on in the draft. We've seen that every single year. This year should be no exceptions. And by the way, I just finished my final, NBA draft matchmaking over at Basketball Writers. And you got one of your guys, Brian. Don't worry about it.
I know you didn't give me Ty Jerome, which I'm pissed about. Did you give me Ty Wool?
I gave you some.
The kid from Washington, Ty Wool.
I gave you Ty Wool.
All of these wings who can't shoot. I love it.
Yeah. No, he can shoot.
I know.
He hit 85% from the line as well. This dude can actually do something.
Yeah.
But with them having the Spurs having the 19th pick and the 29th, that presents a pretty good situation for them because they are excellent at getting value later on in the draft. And going in to this segment, that was going to be basically my only point to the Spurs. They need more talent.
Yeah.
They need more talent. I mean, let's just be honest. Whatever Pop has done and what the collectiveness of the roster has done, so impressive, but they need more. They need talent. And having two first-rounders, and I think they even have the 46th pick in the draft as well, if I'm not mistaken. Let me just check real quick. They have the 49th pick in the draft as well.
Okay.
So they have three draft picks. Like, I don't think it's likely that they bring on three rookies at the same time. I think they should, but I don't think it's likely. So one of them will probably be a draft and stash, which usually works out for the Spurs, by the way.
Right. Yeah. I seem to remember this Manu Ginobili fellow working out well for them.
Yeah, whoever he was. Right. I like how Tim Duncan was like, who is he? I never heard about him, Pop. Right. Who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
So there's definitely an opportunity to get better and younger. I think they need to begin their youth movement now. Yeah. And so Spurs fans are going to flame me for this.
Oh, no.
But if they get a good offer on LaMarcus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that about pretty much every NBA player. There are like less than or fewer than 10 guys who I wouldn't at least entertain offers for.
Yeah, I know. But, the Spurs fans have really grown to LaMarcus.
Yeah.
Remember the first couple of years, they were not very satisfied. Very but anti. Now he's been very much accepted into their family right now. So right. I would understand why, people wouldn't want to see him moved.
Sure.
But he's from 1985, so he's going to be 34 this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's completely reasonable. Also, I mean, you said the Spurs have 29. The last two times they had 29 was Derek White and Murray. Like, they are so excellent. And Corey Joseph in 2011, they got a 29 as well. Like, they are just so excellent at mining and quality NBA players in that range of the draft where it's really hard to get. I mean, they got Kyle Anderson at number 30 in 2014 too. Like White we'll see and Murray we'll see. Joseph and Anderson are just like quality role players, but that's fine. Like, you're not expecting to necessarily hit a home run in that range, but they keep finding, like, their scouting department is just excellent. And they keep finding guys who can contribute to winning basketball teams in a range where, like, most other teams are selling their picks or, like, picking international guys that will never come over.
Yeah. So I have a question for you that I've just been waiting on.
Oh, boy.
So let's assume that the Lakers do flame out in free agency, right?
Sure.
They need someone else.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
They're looking at DeRozan.
Oh, my God.
Do the Spurs accept a package for DeRozan that includes like Kyle Kuzma and potentially Brandon Ingram? Would they need more?
I mean, they would have to, presumably, at least for contract matching purposes.
Right.
But yeah.
Well, I don't know. Oh, the Lakers should have some cap space.
No, I would probably do that deal. I don't know if they would, because I think they just want Pop to win forever.
Yeah.
But, like, that seems completely reasonable. Also, Ingram, the whole DVT thing, I think that just hurts his trade value so much. Just the medical uncertainty there. But
notice that I at no point included Lonzo Ball.
I know. No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you include him, the Spurs are out. There's no chance.
Right, exactly.
No chance they put up with that nonsense.
Right, but Kuzma and Ingram.
Yeah, that's interesting.
From what I gather, are not problem childs whatsoever.
Right.
Not that I'm saying that Lonzo necessarily is. Lonzo seems fine. It's more
his father.
Voldemort? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. No, that's interesting, especially if they can't retain Rudy Gay for whatever reason and they need another wing.
Yeah, and I'm just looking. The reason I suggested this, I'm looking at the ages of Derek White, Deontay Murray, and Lonnie Walker.
Yep.
That kind of lines up with Ingram and Kuzma, right?
And Jakob Poeltl, don't forget.
And Jakob Poeltl.
Or as the Game of Zones people would say, you're totally right. I think it's at least within the realm of reason, and that would be so. Oh my god! if the Lakers went into this offseason, I mean, I don't even think they're like promising getting a free agent at this point.
Nope.
But like, if they leave it with DeMar DeRozan as their number two, oh my god.
That could be fantastic.
Lakers Twitter would just have to hide for a year.
Yep.
Like, they'd just all have to just go away. You can never sign on again.
LeBron drives. Passes to DeRozan. DeRozan drives. Passes to LeBron. LeBron drives. Oh, shot clock violation. Ball's going back to Denver.
I love it. I love it. All right. Well, that's probably...
yeah. That is a good way to wrap up.
Yeah. Too good. All right, yeah, that is a good place to wrap up. So thank you for everyone following. Please check us out on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, enjoy the Game 7s tomorrow, and for the love of God, get your wife and Mother's Day present.
Yes, that final bit is probably the most important thing.
Right.
By the way, totally forgot to mention this. We will be doing it before the season, you know, before the new season starting July 1st. We'll be doing one more mailbag episode, Brian, because we promised people we'd do it. So if you have, you know, a question about your team or just some team in the NBA, free agency ideas, whatever you want to pitch us or ask us, whatever, we're going to do one major mailbag episode. You have several weeks, even a month plus, to put in your question. And so far, I think it's going to be Twitter, but I am considering setting up a specific email for this segment. Ooh. So stay tuned.
Nice. Yeah. But in the meantime, hit us up either at the NBA Pod or at one of our Twitter handles as well. We'll be happy to field your questions ahead of what promises to be a ridiculous summer. But enjoy Game 7s. We'll be back with a conference finals preview early next week. And then we also have the lottery on Tuesday. So a big week for the NBA coming up. And please, God, Sixers, don't embarrass yourselves.
Amen. Talk soon, buddy.
All right. Later, man.